Genesis 29, starting in verse 31, through chapter 30, verse 24. This is our God's holy and inspired, God-breathed word. When the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, He opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. For she said, "The Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me." Then she conceived again and bore a son and said, "Because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, He has therefore given me this son also." And she called his name Simeon. She conceived again and bore a son and said, "Now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons." Therefore, his name was called Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, "Now I will praise the Lord." Then she stopped bearing his name. Therefore, she called his name Judah. Then she stopped bearing. Now, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or I die." And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in the place of God who's withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" So she said, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her, and she will bear a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her." Then she gave him Bilhah, her maid, as wife, and Jacob went into her. And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, "God has judged my case, and He's also heard my voice and given me a son." Therefore she called his name Dan. And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, "With great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed." So she called his name Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as wife. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, "A troop comes." So she called his name Gad. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, "I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed." So she called his name Asher. Now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field, and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Please, give me some of your son's mandrakes." But she said to her, "Is it a small matter that you've taken my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also?" And Rachel said, "Therefore he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes." When Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come into me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." And he lay with her that night. And Jacob listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Leah said, "God has given me my hire, because I have given my maid to my husband." So she called his name Issachar. Then Leah conceived and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, "God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me, because I have borne him six sons." So she called his name Zebulun. Afterwards she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, "God has taken away my reproach." So she called his name Joseph, and said, "The Lord shall add to me another son." This is the reading of our God's holy word. If you thought the last chapter of Genesis and our last sermon was particularly shocking, well, you're in for a similar story today. Again, we ask, what in the world is this doing in the Bible? This is really one of those places in the Bible, and there are a few of them, where we have to stop and think, what is really going on here? This reads like a bad soap opera. This is a bad soap opera. If the Bible were made for television, I think maybe this episode in particular, we couldn't watch in good conscience. There's bitterness abounding and rivalry residing for years and years, and marriage is marred, and there is misery, and there is manipulation, and there are handmaids and mandrakes. And yet, when soap operas are watched, the sin is meant to be appealing. It's meant to gratify us or evoke a certain pleasure in us. It's meant to arouse our passion and our pleasure. But not this story. Here we truly learn about the character of God. We will see misery, yes, and we will see manipulation, but we will also see God's mercy. And this is how we'll basically divide up the text today. First, we will see those who are children of misery, mainly in chapter 29, 31 to chapter 30, verse 2. And then we will see children of manipulation in verse 3 of chapter 30 to verse 21. And then lastly, we will look at verse 23 and 24, and then the chapter as a whole, and consider children of mercy. So first, we move to thinking, or paying attention to those children of misery. As you may have noticed, we're talking quite a lot about children, and we should keep in mind as we begin that children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward, like arrows in the hand of a warrior. And also, we should remember that part of a woman's calling, as she is able, is to bear children and raise them up in the teaching and admonition of the Lord. And this should have us thinking, why then are we starting talking about children of misery? In our last sermon, we saw the way God brought adversity into the life of Jacob. Rebekah showed favoritism to Jacob in a similar way to how Jacob now shows favoritism to Rachel, so that Leah, we see in verse 31, is unloved. Some translations are stronger and say hated, but it's not an all-out loathing, but it is a considerable favoritism. And it's so much so upon Leah that both women really are miserable. Rachel and Leah both want to bear children to escape their misery. And we see in their lives just how true the proverb is, hope deferred makes the heart sick. You know, children normally serve to strengthen the bond between husband and wife, normally make the family unit stronger and happier, so that Leah just might smile from ear to ear at having beautiful children. But her heart is sick. Her children bear the names of misery. We see this starting in verse 32. Look with me. Reuben means see a son. And she said, the Lord has surely looked upon my misery, upon my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. And we see that this misery comes from the way this relationship is working. And in verse 33, Simeon heard, which means heard, because the Lord has heard that I am hated. And in verse 34, Levi means attached. Now this time my husband will become attached to me. And if you hear what Leah is saying by naming her children, it's something like, I'm miserable. I'm afflicted. I'm unloved. And I want someone to be attached to me. And maybe that will happen now. These words are the words of a sick and desperate heart. But Leah isn't the only one with hope deferred or a sick heart. Rachel, in verse 1 of chapter 30, when she saw that she bore Jacob no children, it says that Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." And maybe that's a little melodramatic, you'd think, right? It's a little overstated. But we do see just how deeply her pain and her misery goes. This is what happens with sin. The fruit of polygamy is envy and rivalry and favoritism. And Jacob, being sinful, is letting one wife go unloved. Everything is twisted and perverted. Children are a good thing, and now they're being used as expressions of misery and one-upmanship and selfish gain. Give me children or else I die. I need to have what Leah has because I want to look like her and have what... It's petty and sad. And Leah, the childbearer, she's not without want or envy either. She wants to look like Rachel, who we've read before was beautiful in her appearance. We always want what we don't have, right? Rachel, the beautiful loved one of Jacob, wants the childbearing of Leah. And Leah wants the beauty and attention of Rachel. We're asked by the words of James, "What causes quarrels and fights among you? Is it not this that your passions are at war within you? You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and you quarrel." The blessings of God are being used for sin. And this is evil. It is heart-wrenching evil, and it deserves our pity. And Jacob, instead of correcting the evil in his family, heightens the fever pitch of sin. The thermometer goes up, and in verse 2, chapter 30, it says, "His anger was aroused against Rachel. And he said, 'Am I in the place of God who's withheld from you the fruit of the womb?'" Jeez. This is good theology, right? It's true, but that doesn't mean that it's the right thing to say at this time, right? We have much to learn about being tactful from Jacob here. Shouldn't we be mourning with those who mourn, weeping with those who weep? Infertility is not a blessing, and it is a trial, and it does hurt. And what's more, imagine seeing your sister with another wife, and not only that, but it's your sister, with four beautiful, screaming, laughing, pooping bundles of life. Right? It would be very difficult. And, you know, your husband, can you imagine him coming to you and basically saying, "God has just decided this for you. Bummer." So Jacob's theologically correct cold shoulder makes even more miserable this sickly story of the heart. And before it gets better, it gets worse. And we'll move to consider now those children of manipulation. Children of manipulation, verses 3 to 21. And this section is basically divided into two parts. First, we see the maids and the handmaids, which are surrogate wives. And then we see the mandrakes. Maids and mandrakes. So, manipulation part one, maids. Rachel, we see, is not content without children. No. But her envy, actually, is for what Leah has. And she sins against God, quite clearly, through her manipulation. Rachel adds fuel to the fire. In verse 3, she says, "Here's my maid Bilhah. go into her, and she may bear children on my knees, that I also may have children by her." Ah, Rachel, right? Did God not promise to Jacob? Did he not promise that he would make his seed into a multitude of people? God's desires seem to be the last thing on anyone's mind. And not only is there distrust of God, but because there's distrust of God, there's distrust of each other. And Rachel's life is wrapped up in getting children now, as envy is added to envy with Leah, and now with Bilhah. Polygamy is added to polygamy. Sin is added to sin. And this is not the way to get good. Marriage, children, and love are a number of good things and blessings from God, but they aren't to be grasped at this way through sin. They're meant to be given by God in His timing. Children of this kind of manipulation here are, again, by surrogacy, by Bilhah. And Rachel starts to self-exalt through her sin in verse 6. She has this uninspired commentary through the names of her children. She says in verse 6, "God has judged my case." And the language seems to say also that God has favorably judged her case. That is, that He has heard my voice and given me a son. Therefore, she calls his name Dan, which sounds like judge. And in verse 8, she goes on in this commentary, "With great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed." And so she calls his name Naphtali. And we see that the bitterness just really ooze out of Rachel and her names for her children that come through this manipulation. And Leah, last sermon, if you remember, we did recognize that in her fourth child, Judah, she actually stops trying to, it seems, gain the attention of her husband. She was concerned with him loving her and being attached to her and all of these things. And then with Judah, she said, "Praise the Lord," right? We had this glimpse of goodness in Leah. But it's easy to be content when the Lord blesses us, isn't it? And what about when we continue to be unloved? And our siblings, who should love us the most because they're the closest to us, start calling down the judgments of God on us and pronouncing upon us all these evils that we're inadequate and weak and conquered and judged. What then? Leah does not take up a godly shield of faith and endure. Instead, she joins in this dramatic arms race of manipulation. She says, "Two can play this game." Leah fires back at Rachel through Zilpah, her surrogate wife, for Jacob, and Jacob sitting passively by in the slippery slope of sin, showing just how easy it is, again, for sin to give birth to sin, further hardening our hearts to its reality and presence in our lives. Zilpah has Gad, which literally means a troop, which is showing you how militant this really is, and Asher, which means happy, and the battle rages on, and the temperature rises. And you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me, I don't know if you've ever seen a child who just throws a fit, or out of the corner of your eye, you see one child hit another to get them to cry, and they do it for this particular reason. They want their parents' attention. That's almost what it seems like here. These women throwing this fit and screaming at each other to get Jacob's attention. And it's so sad. It's like two archers shooting back at each other, hurting each other and grasping to seek attention and pleasure. And we wonder, where is their seeking for the will of God? These wives make even more miserable this sickly story of the heart. And before it gets better, it gets worse once again as we move to consider, lastly, on our evil spectrum, manipulation, part two, the mandrakes. And this is where the soap opera drama really comes to its boiling point. Verse 14, now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field. And mandrake fruit, so we get the story here, was said to have an aphrodisiac type effect. And it probably had some kind of superstitious effect as well. And the fruit of the mandrake flower was often called apples of love. And so the son brings them to his mother Leah. And Rachel says to Leah, please give me your son's mandrakes. And you can see just how serious this question really is now. And since she's fighting with infertility and not trusting God, but trying on her own effort to manipulate the situation, you can see why this is a very serious thing. So Leah says to Rachel, is it a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Would you also take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel says, therefore he will lie with you tonight in exchange for your son's mandrakes. And we see, really, again, to sound like a broken record, how sin gives birth to sin. How the effects of sin just are degenerating. That Rachel is willing to trade this object of superstition or small measure of what she thinks is control and manipulation for her husband. She does that for her husband. It's amazing. It's too much to handle. And there's also this aspect of how sin dulls us to reality. When we lose sight of God's purposes and His commands of what our lives are intended to mean, or our births, or our children, or whatever it is, we become completely irrational and totally emotionally spent in all of the wrong ways. Rachel doesn't trust God with her womb, and so she's made to trust in something so petty as a plant, which will wither. This is like Jacob earlier, who spent his passion and sold his birthright for a bowl of soup. When Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come into me, for I have hired you with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. And we see the holy promises of God to Jacob. In this verse, they seem as if they're just trampled underfoot. And as if God's people were just playing a game, or really part of a soap opera for people's entertainment. We do see a glimpse of hope in verse 17 that God listened to Leah, which may indicate that Leah was praying. And clearly it's good for a mother to desire to give her husband children. It appears again that Leah's been praying for it, but God gives her children out of His love. But Leah afterwards names her children. Verse 18, we see Issachar means higher. And 20, verse 20, Zebulun means dwelling. Jacob will dwell with her now. And there's a way which she, you know, we have to look at how she says, because I've borne him in verse 18, or verse 20. As if what she did was actually the consequence or the result of the consequence of her sin. That is, because she hired Jacob, because she worked to accomplish this, God did these things. She thinks she manipulated the situation for her gain. But you know what? She's wrong. God creates for Himself children of mercy. God's mercy in this story is really, truly, and utterly unbelievable. God could have struck them all with infertility. Rachel and Leah and Bilhah and Zilpah. He could have said, you know what? You're way too sinful to be bearing children. Or you're way too sinful to live. Maybe God could have the earth open up and swallow them whole in an earthquake. God could do all of these things. And God could have given Jacob no arrows for his quiver, but God, He does better than merely give children. He is not like Jacob, who turns the theological cold shoulder. He shows that He is merciful. And He's merciful because these children are truly children of mercy. And we move to see that next. Children of mercy, starting with verse 22. We hear the first words of mercy in quite some time, or tenderness, I should say, that then God remembered. And those are sweet words. This is good news. God listened to Leah. God remembered Rachel. Despite their sins and despite all this evil going on, God is faithful to His promises. He is a God of steadfast love and mercy, and He will be faithful when all are faithless. And so Rachel has her first son, Joseph. And Joseph's name has a bit of a double meaning here. It's interesting. It looks like the word for taken away, as in, God has taken away my reproach, which is from verse 23. But it also means God will add, which we see in verse 24. He'll add to me another son. So Joseph somewhat comes to represent the children of mercy here. Since God's great work of salvation is to take away for and atone for sin, to cover our sin and our reproach before God, and yet it is also to add the benefits of His love. And this, you know, this isn't only true for Joseph. It's true for all of the children of Jacob and Leah and Rachel and Zilpah and Bilhah. But it's also for the whole story of the Bible. Remember, Joseph's brothers sell him into slavery and live up to their names as children of misery and manipulation. And they sin and scandalize others. They deceive their father, who continues in his favoritism, the same favoritism, with Benjamin and Joseph. The favoritism which caused hurt with Rachel and Leah, now in Benjamin and Joseph, and causing all this disruption among the children. And for that reason, they sell them into slavery. But despite that manipulation and misery, God brings mercy. Joseph says to his brothers, after he's been elevated and made second over all of Egypt, he says, what you meant for evil, God meant for good, to bring about the salvation of many people. And God used Joseph to save the whole tribe of Israel from famine. And more than that, to save Egypt, the Gentile nations, from dying from famine. And God brought His people up out of the land of Egypt and out of slavery under Moses. And you know what? You could say that in the Exodus, in that bringing them up out of Egypt, God covered the reproach of His people. They marked blood over their doors, and He delivered them from the womb of oppression and misery and manipulation so that they could be born a free people to worship their God. And they were given the benefits of His love. You see, God makes children of mercy. And these so-called children of misery and manipulation, these specific ones here in Genesis 29 and 30, these are the same ones who come to represent all the people of God, the nation of Israel. These ones would be honored in the tribe of Levi. If you remember, the tribe of Levi were the priests to God. They were the ones who interceded for everyone. And They interceded for the afflicted, the sinful, the hurtful, who wanted to draw near to God so that God could draw near to them as objects of His love and as of His mercy and no longer suffer under His wrath. Levi, named attached because of this family sin, now a type of Jesus to come. And these children are honored in the name Judah. Judah became representative, became the father of kings and conquerors, of rule and dominion, such as Jesus himself. This is them conquering by the Spirit of God. Jesus, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, who would come from Judah in all of this misery and oppression. What an honor. What a mercy God truly gives us through these children. And as we saw early in Revelation 4, it's the 12 tribes of Israel who are represented as half those elders in John's vision who fall down before Jesus who sits on the throne and worship Him who lives forever and ever. And they cast their crown saying, "Worthy are You, O Lord, to receive glory and honor." This is amazing. To receive power. He's the one who created all things, and by His will they exist and were created. And these ones, these children here, are part of that worship. Jesus is the one who makes children of mercy. And we need to say, praise King Jesus. Praise to the Lion of the tribe of Judah. Praise to the greater Joseph. Praise to the giver of life. All 12 tribes of Israel and their people give praise. All 12 apostles of the Lamb and their people give praise. And you, here today. God has a purpose for every bit of pain that you suffer. Whether it's being barren or unloved, or alone, or rejected, or the object or subject of sin in this misery and manipulation. Whatever evil confronts you, whether you're tempted by rivalry, deceit, envy, or anger, God is working His plan to make children of mercy. And you know that you have stained your hands with sin, and you have been in misery, and you have manipulated. And how could this mercy be for you? You've gotten less pain in your life than you deserve, so long as you're alive. And the answer for you is no different than for Leah and Rachel and Jacob. The answer is Jesus. If you are believing in Him, Jesus has covered your reproach. And all His suffering and all His sin, all of His pain and His blood has covered you. That's amazing. And that's not all. He's added to you as children of mercy the blessings of God, even being part of His people here as children of God. If you're trusting in Jesus, you are no longer a child of misery. In fact, you're far from it. You found the only true source of joy. Neither are you a child of manipulation. For come what may, we trust that God is sovereign in all things and controls every last part of the earth by the sustaining power of His hand. You've been born from His almighty power, children of mercy, and part of the family of God. Amen. Let us now pray together and pray to our great God of the children of mercy. Please bow your heads with me.